Buffy comes to TV, Kratos kills history, and Bruce Campbell battles the undead again, this week in 30-2010.
30-2010, 30-2010, three decades, every show, some death associated videos. 30-2010, 30-2010, the presses are awaiting, yes, we're going to the 80s and the 90s and 2000s.
Welcome to a new episode of 30-2010, a weekly look back at what happened in pop culture this very week, 30-2010 years ago. That's 87, 97, and 2007, the week period of March 10th through the 16th. I'm one of your hosts, Brett Elston.
Necronama, Chris Antista.
I'm Andy Dick's twin brother, Dave Rudden.
I was going to go with Dead by Dawn, Diana Goodman.
And a lot of D alliteration.
Yeah.
With Dave and Diana's double D. This is your first episode. Welcome. Thanks for listening. Go to 30-2010.net and follow
so
along
fun.
With... we write up the notes of each show so you can follow along with the clips we're playing or leave your comments, especially about what we play, because the comments section for the pages are really cool.
Yeah, real fun.
We'll be reading some at the end of the show, but where everyone was in 87, 97, 07 and what they were doing. It's really cool. The show is supported by patreon.com/lasertime.
By you, the listener.
By you.
The listener. And if you
thank
liked
you.
Last year, where we did 86, 96, and 06, we have a wrap-up for all those years.
Yeah.
It's really fun on Patreon, just for you people who support us.
And we explain the difference of the Grammys distinction between record of the year.
Learn what's the difference between record and album of the year.
I still don't know.
Mm-hmm. But we always begin in 1987. Again, this is March 10th through the 16th. We go 7 days by 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
March 12th, quick bit of news. Les Miserables.
What?
Debuts on Broadway.
Really?
And runs until 2003.
Man, okay.
When it is supplanted 10 years later by the hit film.
What?
The Miserables.
Less Miserables?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm Less Miserable.
I'm Less Miserable. Come on down. Buy a Toyota. Less Miserable Toyota.
That's West Miserable.
Ah, my bad. My bad. What? Yeah, okay.
I've never seen the show in person. I know our buddy Henry Gilbert. I think it's his favorite show. But I'm not a fan of the movie.
Boom! The movie had a lot of...
it had a lot of flaws.
That's what yes. Russell Crowe won the Oscar for.
Ah,
shut up.
That's one of the biggest ones.
Yeah. Mm. Well, the songs are good. They're fun. Mostly. Well, mostly. Can you hear the people sing?
I don't know. Girlfriend's a fan. She made sure to see it with her family and not me. So I still don't know anything about Les Miserables.
Miserable.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it. Moving on. Into movies, Lethal Weapon, which we talked about last week, debuted alongside Raising Arizona.
That's nuts.
But Lethal Weapon is number
what
one.
What a date movie double feature.
Oh, man. I bet a drive-in was bumping that night. starting this week, first on movies is Swimming to Cambodia,
huh?
Which I put a size 72 font question mark next to.
Swimming to Cambodia is a film by Jonathan Demme of Spalding Gray doing basically a monologue about his time filming a small part in the film The Killing Fields. And a lot of people, they love it. Don't think I've ever seen the whole thing. More importantly, though, the documentary now parody of it was so good. Please give Bill Hader all of the awards.
That's a great show.
Yeah. Parker Gale's Location is Everything is the episode title. And it captures the kind of intellectual New Yorker neurotic sort of bullshit that's like the ultimate in white people problems, where it's like, you know, a couple disagreeing and then they're going to move from this loft to that loft and oh, and his publisher is doing this and you're like, oh my God.
I own two apartments. I'm just not happy. I have the easiest job where I eat lunch with my friends every day.
We're going to split up all this clam chowder.
Where it's like he thinks that he's introspective but really like we gradually understand, no, he's pretty nuts. That episode, Bill Hader is so fucking good. I can't get over it. I just like I want to grab him by the shoulders and scream, "How are you so fucking good?"
Yeah, but that show is amazing.
My
dad exposed me to not that documentary, but a lot of other ones, and that I cannot believe what a deep dive that show is in the parody.
Yeah, every time documentary now comes on, it's like, how fast into the ad can I guess what the next episode is? And you can ask Michael when I saw. With seriously one still, I realized, oh my God, they're doing Kid Stays in the Picture. I like jumped up and was like, yeah!
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Kid Stays in the Picture, Kid Stays in the Picture. And it's like, how do you know that? I'm like, I can just tell!
Would the title of Swimming in Cambodia turn
swimming
out to
Cambodia.
Swimming to Cambodia turn right. out to be ironic, given that we know now Spalding Gray is not a strong swimmer.
Mm.
Who is Spalding Gray? I don't even know that.
He's well, a... for that joke, he's a man who killed himself by jumping in the water from a bridge.
Yes. God. But, well, it was probably the impact that killed him.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably. He's terrible with impact. Always has been. He's the first to admit that.
Yeah, he's a writer, monologuist.
Okay.
That's a job, right?
Yeah, it's
and, you know,
those,
he's got small acting parts here and there.
One of those okay. careers that no longer exists. In the days of, like, Eric Bogosian and John Leguizamo one-man shows
right.
kind of thing.
Yeah. He's great in John Wick 2.
It's like stand-up, but not required to be funny.
Yeah.
It's just a lesson told to you.
It's instead of laughing, you go... Quite. Quite.
No smoking.
Ah, yes.
Astute. Yes.
Also out this week, Down Twisted,
huh?
Carrie Lowell, Nicholas Guest, Charles Rocket, and the first movie role for Courtney Cox.
Wow.
Oh.
Dancing in the Dark was 84, when she's in the video with Bruce Springsteen. So this is, 87?
Mm-hmm.
So it took a few years, but now she's not starring role, but there's a trailer, and as you can imagine, it's just super 80s. And I think it's the movie's about just like two girls and a deal goes south, and then now they're wrapped up in
I wanted tornadoes.
Criminal stuff.
That was an easy setup.
Drive, Michelle. I thought we were friends. Friends don't take a drug dealing at midnight in a deserted parking lot.
With a deadly twist.
Michelle!
And I'm gonna, and in our true 80s fashion, I have to jump to the end.
Carrie Lowell, in over her head. Charles Rocket, about to lose his.
Ferris Bueller.
Down Twisted.
It's kind of sad that they said Charles Rocket's about to lose his head when he shot himself.
Hey, another suicide joke. We're on a roll.
No, he did not shoot himself. He cut his own throat.
Oh.
He tried to decapitate himself. Really.
Oh, my God.
So,
I mean,
the fortitude to go for that, though.
Yeah. You got to want it.
It's commitment. Mm.
Speaking of decapitations, there's plenty of that in this week's top film, Lock of the Week.
4 years ago, in this quiet forest, in this cozy cabin, something happened. Something so frightening. Something so deadly. Something so evil. We prayed it would never happen again. Now, from the creator of Evil Dead comes Evil Dead 2.
It's a long way to get there. All that suspense for that.
I love that trailer, though.
I like that they have exposition in there, even though the first half of Evil Dead 2 is pretty much just Evil Dead 1 again.
It's not entirely the first half, but I read up on it when we did something for Laser Time with Evil Dead 2, but the rationale behind that, because people assume... Evil Dead was a huge cult hit. Mm. Especially in the video scene, but the producers or even Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell were concerned no one had seen it. So why call it Evil Dead 2? Dead by Dawn, which was, I think, its subtitle at the time. But it does remake sequences from the first movie and undo them, essentially, if you want to look really closely. But it doesn't matter. I don't have anything against Evil Dead 1. It's just such a straightforward 80s horror movie. And Evil Dead 2 is a triumph. It is a masterpiece.
It's
it is everything.
Where the same raminess starts flying out of it. And
I have friends who are only fans of the first one. It's
really?
Weird. And and the new one apparently does a good job of recreating a legit, like, authentic scary vibe, but the second one is so funny. So fucking funny and outlandish. It's so great.
It took me a while to warm up to it because I think the first time someone showed it to me, they basically sold it as a horror movie. And so I was like, What the fuck is this? This is just weird.
Yeah.
What? I mean, like, okay, this is horror, but now, like, this is ridiculous. Wait, what? And I realized, oh, wait, no, it's a comedy.
Yeah.
If someone just said, this is a funny horror comedy, then I would have gotten it the first time.
If I tell you this is a, like, Donald Duck cartoon, where a house and an evil book want to attack him for 90 minutes, you should be on board, and that is what this is, with amazing effects. I love this movie.
Yeah, there's so many cool practical effects. And it is,
it's just
like
gory, gross out and shit.
put Bruce Campbell in a cabin and Sam Raimi torture him for on a
back in the same cabin, because it implied that he was dead. He was killed at the end of the first movie. And a bunch of other stuff happened that's not in the second movie. I didn't bring it up, and I didn't even know this was coming, that we just talked about Nightmare on Elm Street. Somebody stole the glove from Nightmare on Elm Street. And it turns out it was someone involved with Evil Dead stole Freddy's glove, and it's in this movie. Because Nightmare on Elm Street played the original Evil Dead on the TV, and it was something they were trading back and forth. What I do think is weird about this, and Army of Darkness kind of follows that suit, too. It has to, it doesn't trust the audience to know what happened in the second film and has to recap it. Not in the Friday the 13th kind of way that just shows you the last 5 minutes of the movie. It just has to reshoot it. But I was fascinated more by that it was released. All four Evil Dead movies, including the 2013 remake, were all released like by distributed by different studios, and that's what makes this weird and why like nobody really has any faith in it. It's people just I don't know if there's a franchise like that anymore. It's owned, I guess, by Raimi and Campbell, and they have say where it goes, and they have to find the right studio to get behind it. And the first one was distributed by New Line Pictures. The third one, as notorious, you know, Evil Dead fans are no doubt aware of, Universal, like, gave Army of Darkness a much bigger budget, and TriStar released the fourth one. And because this is 87, Evil Dead 2 is released by Dino De Laurentiis. Dino De Laurentiis Pictures, but if you notice in the beginning, there's a very cheesy Rosebud Pictures, and that's what I went down the rabbit hole of trying to figure out what that was.
It's the sled.
It's a name that somebody came up with off the top of their head, because Evil Dead 2 was originally given an X rating. And because Raimi's like, no, I don't want to, I'm not cutting it. Fuck. And no should he have to, because like none of that shit is like real or scary. I mean, it's a giant stop motion tree creature, for fuck's sake. Like, why is this? It's not a horror. There's not a lot of real horror in Evil Dead 2. So De Laurentiis created Rosebud Pictures to release. That's the only film it's ever released is Evil Dead 2.
Weird.
And it's at the beginning of that trailer as well. It's this terrible, terrible film logo. But there's like all these articles from back then. People are trying to figure out who they are, and like, it's one guy registered to a P.O. box in the middle of nowhere. Who is Rosebud Pictures? Wow. But it was that old MPAA system having to avoid the X rating, unrated. Dino De Laurentiis' studio wasn't legally allowed to release an unrated or X rated picture.
It was this movie where they introduced the chainsaw hand, right? That wasn't in the
original? No, I think it was in the first one, isn't it? Okay.
You know, I've never seen the first one.
Are you kidding?
No. Well, I mean, besides
I've seen it once.
Besides that, I'm a sissy when it comes to horror films. I've heard that, it's just kind of a rough... Mm-hmm. It's a roughie. It's a rough graphic horror film, so I'm kind of like, And since I've heard that, this Evil Dead 2 is largely a remake, but then with a lot of the comedy and the goofiness, like, I'll just stick with this one, thanks.
This is my go-to one. I want to spread that into Army of Darkness. I just love the setting of Evil Dead 2, and I don't love the setting of Evil Dead or Army of Darkness, but it is amazing. It's a high-budget version of Evil Dead 2.
I saw Army of Darkness in the theater with my dad in 93, I guess, something like that. There were three people in the theater.
Wow.
Me and my dad, someone else.
Bruce Campbell.
I'm not sure where he's from. It's possible.
I think that it was the same slow burn with this film, too. and that's why, like, it's a horror movie released in fucking March. I think it went to a couple theaters and then slowly started making its money back. And, I mean, everybody should have at least heard of Evil Dead 2.
And now there's the show on Showtime.
It's amazing. We're living in a different world of media. I hate having to tell friends who I know from back home who had Evil Dead posters on the wall, have you seen Ash vs. Evil Dead? And they're like, I don't have stars. Really? You're not going to go out of your way to track down? And I didn't either, and I finally did through... illegitimate means, but it's great. It's amazing.
It's another one of those shows where they put the first episode up to watch for free on their site, and then it was like, and now subscribe, close tab, close. No, not doing it.
It's really fun, though. But more than anything, watch Evil Dead 2. That I can't think of a better movie we'll be talking about this week than Evil Dead 2. It is a Halloween tradition for me.
Yeah, they're both great. Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, so much fun. I mean, Iron Dragon tips the line even further to Goofball 9000.
So goofy.
But,
and our buddy Greg like swears by the remake being legit scary. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I feel like they would have done themselves a favor by not calling it Evil Dead 2.
Totally.
Just call it something else. Call it Dead by Dawn.
But just the way the trailer guy introduced it.
Nobody would have noticed.
The trailer guy is letting you know there was an Evil Dead 1.
Right.
Because
Which you haven't
heard of. You wouldn't have thought that with Evil Dead 2 as a title.
Yeah, but then that's like a bad idea, though, because a lot of people didn't see Evil Dead 1. So they were like, well, I'm not going to be able to follow this story. This is clearly the Empire Strikes Back of the pack. I'm not going to be able to follow the story.
And if you do want to see it, on lasertime.bandcamp, we did a commentary, and you can buy it there for like $1 or get it free as a patron on patreon.com/lasertime with Henry, who's a way bigger Raimi Bruce Campbell fan and knows way more information than I do.
Yeah. Mm. Television this week.
Well, moving on from Evil Dead to Sitcom Dead, Family Ties episode A, My Name is Alex airs.
Oh my God.
It's a two-part episode where Alex Keaton's friend dies in a car accident and Alex has trouble coping and he seeks therapy as a result. It won a Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Writing in a Comedy Series. And I have a not very funny clip, but it is Michael J. Fox.
Doc, I got all this grief, Doc!
I was supposed to be in that car with him, Al.
Yeah, but you weren't.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't. You know why? Because I was lazy. Because I was small. Because I couldn't be bothered. My life was saved out of smallness. Out of lack of generosity to a friend. I just don't get it, man. Why am I still alive?
You're still alive to aggravate me.
No, that's no answer.
I'm just joking, Alex.
No, I should have been with Greg. I should have been sitting right next to him. I don't want answers, okay? Because I can't go on like this. Why am I alive? Why am I alive?
And I never learned to read.
I remember watching this in school. It was one of those things where it's like, well, I don't know. I don't feel like teaching or something. I'm going to show you this thing. It's really meaningful. You're really going to... I'm an adult. I'm going to rap with you here with this episode of Family Ties from a couple of years ago. And I remember a big chunk of it, he goes to a therapist's office, which is just a black box theater, and it's just him monologuing for like the whole...
What
time.
Is a Keaton?
Yeah, it really is just like, I mean, it's both a very special episode and that I don't think this is a friend that we ever saw on the show. They've invented him to die. And yeah, so it's a very special episode and also like dramatic showcase. Mm-hmm. You know, an episode of Family Ties that will move you.
I guess it doesn't sound like typical
mid-80s
sitcom fare.
No, it's super not. You know, it's them trying something different. And of course, anytime a dumb sitcom tries something dramatic, everyone goes, oh, that was so amazing. It is so brilliant. Let's give them awards.
So they still had to throw some laughs in there, like Justin Bateman, like, well, you aggravate me. That's why you're still alive.
Waka waka.
The lines he's saying also sound like the beginning of a villain monologue.
A moment of
small. I was too small.
Like, I'll never feel small again.
I'll show them.
Like, it's right out of Watchmen or something.
I'm now Foxman.
When everybody is small, no one is.
I'm a big boy. Doc should have been in that car, not me.
The car was going 87 miles.
The doc's alive.
Can't stop.
Why did we let Einstein drive the car? A dog can't drive a car.
If they got the car to 88, it would have gone back in time. Yeah. Instead, he's dead.
Well, another sitcom fixture made one of his first acting appearances this week.
Oh,
a young Mario Lopez appeared on an episode of Golden Girls, and I have a clip of it.
Oh, please be fucked by Rue McClanahan.
Man, you know it.
Next Golden Girls, class is in session.
Why do I have to learn algebra?
Because I had to learn how to teach it.
And Dorothy's prized pupil wins a contest.
Surprise! Mario, that's just beautiful.
You should hear it when I read it.
But he loses a lot more.
We have reason to believe that Mario is in this country illegally.
It's a test in courage.
Doesn't mean that we're going to have to give up. We're going to fight this.
On the next Golden Girls.
Holy shit.
Wait.
Wednesday.
Wednesday. This show rules, and it's all on Hulu now, and we started rewatching it, and it is great from, like, so many shows take, it takes, a season or two, but it's, all those four characters are perfect from the first episode, and even by we're in episode eight, and it's these are all great. Every one of the sometimes the stories are so small that it's what a comforting blanket.
Yes.
That the stakes are so low, and then there's others that are I can't believe this is a topic, in a show in 1987 that's all led by women who are over 50. Like, it's insane. Like, it's such a cool show.
Well, I mean, even though immigration isn't an issue anymore...
We solved that shit.
Yeah, but it's all solved. Yeah, it's all,
I mean,
it's
the shadow good. Of that wall is still covering us from...
I'm going to make Mario build the wall. The other half of the episode...
When we get sun at high noon, it's fine.
The B-plot is the most sitcom-iest thing you'll ever see.
I'm sure it is.
So, meanwhile, this is from the Wikipedia description. Meanwhile, Rose decides that she must become Blanche's personal slave for a week to atone for losing a pair of Blanche's earrings, which it turns out Blanche herself lost.
Oh, no.
Oh, Blanche.
That sounds like a problem that can be solved in 12 minutes.
Yeah, always talk it out before you start drawing a chalk line to the center of the room.
But she's my golden girl butler. And lastly, we have a trio of TV movies.
The first one is... so much. These are such a lost art.
The first one is called Prison for Children. And
also known as School Rikers. Yes. Yeah. Wow. I'm hip.
Holy shit, Thanos is in this movie.
Yes, it's got quite a cast. You play the clip I have.
I'm not interested in whose fault it was, partner. You're rattling my peace of mind. You just pay a little price, give up a little. Don't try to be so damn special.
Julie!
I've taken this crap long enough. Someone's gonna get hurt.
It's prison, brother.
I wanna help.
John Ritter, Betty Thomas, Prison for Children.
Ready.
And it's just about a juvenile hall, whatever kind of thing. Man. But someone, there's another kid who was not as famous who's like, he's sent there on charges he didn't actually do. Has to survive the touch.
I didn't steal the candy.
Yes.
So I guess like a young Josh Brolin?
Yeah, he's one of the children.
Josh Brolin made so much shit as a teenager. Oh, besides Goonies, I mean, there's a skateboarding movie he made, which is awful. There's a bunch of other things. Just. Yeah, it's amazing that he just sort of like, oh, P.S., I'm an adult and I'm an awesome actor now.
Yeah. Josh Brolin...
Like, what happened? Wait, no, he used to just be the worst. Yes. What?
Josh Brolin was in that prison because he broke into the Fratelli's restaurant.
It does give me hope that Nicolas Cage, before he dies and retires to his pyramid tomb in New Orleans, that he gets some final, like...
Yeah.
Real act, because like he can do good.
Yes.
He just loves to like. What do you have a movie? I'll act in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like he has his choice of whatever he wants to do.
He already did that. He was playing hammy roles and then did Leaving Las Vegas, got an Oscar, and then went back to being a ham.
That's what I'm like. I hope he can get one more. Like, okay, tone it down and be like, do a good.
Bad Lieutenant is amazing. It's great, and he's great as Nicolas Cage in it. Mm. Nicolas Cage is Bad Lieutenant.
I mean, I love him in Raising Arizona. He's very
he's amazing.
Rarely does he go full Cage. Mm. Like, maybe once?
Yeah, but just he is a cartoon, a different kind of cartoon.
And that's
character.
What's weird. He's a cartoon character, and he's worse than Ghost Rider, who is also a fucking cartoon character, but whatever.
Anyway. So, those children in prison have it pretty good compared to the children in We Are the Children. Because those are children starving in Africa.
Oh, no.
The movie is about a woman who goes to help those children, and she falls in love while there.
With one of the children?
No.
Oh, a little inside baseball after this.
The Civil War. It's been going on for years.
Annie is our new doctor.
Help the poor and the downtrodden, huh?
Ali Sheedy, a young doctor learning about life's choices.
You think it's tough now, just wait. You haven't seen anything yet.
This is Ethiopia, not Philadelphia.
Ted Danson, a cynic who can't turn his back on the human spirit.
All I know where you are.
Their love grew in a land where nothing else could. We are the children.
Oh.
Tomorrow.
So, just real quick, the clip began.
It starts a bunch of the clips. I cut it out because it's not germane to each topic. But if you want to play it, like so many things have ads that are based on this one movie that's playing on network TV during the week.
Like the clip, as it goes screaming into break, it is Cannonball Run 2.
Tonight's movie, Cannonball Run 2. We'll continue in a moment.
Is that a Firebird with...
Now prepare to be sad.
No.
It's a Trans Am or a Firebird with police lights on it? Huh. Weird. Undercover cop, man.
And lastly, NBC aired the TV movie In Love and War, which is the story of James Stockdale's experiences as a prisoner of war for 8 years in Vietnam.
I watched this in class, too.
Man, was class all TV in the 80s?
Yes. Yeah, they'd wheel in that giant cart because they didn't want to teach us no more. And we didn't have enough standardized testing to make it worthwhile. James Woods, isn't it?
Yes.
James Woods?
Number one with a bullet. And his James Stockdale's wife, like, spending those 8 years trying to tell the world about POWs and get her husband freed. I have a clip of that.
Colonel, your father is a prisoner of war.
Our country cannot win this war on the battlefield. We'll win this war on the streets of New York.
James Woods.
We must refuse to be reasonable. We have to make them hurt us before we give them anything.
Jane Alexander.
I think it's time for the public to know the truth.
Dr. Hang S. Knorr.
You have made for us great difficulties. I'm sorry.
In Love and War. Rated R.
Damn, so soundtrack is so cute. It started as a TV movie, but I guess it was like put on video and also like with some added content because hence the rated R thing.
Huh. Yeah. Weird.
But James Stockdale would later gain some prominence as the running mate to Ross Perot in 1992.
Right.
He was kind of not out of it, but like wasn't suited for it.
Well, I mean, his most famous clip was during the vice presidential debate. They asked him a question and he said, "What? No, I had my hearing aid off. Ask me again."
When you were silent for 20 minutes? World class.
Yeah, he just super tuned out. Just did not care.
And one of the first things I think he says is like, "Who am I?" Like, because he's not a politician. He was just like, "Who am I? I'm not the politician. I'm this guy."
Yeah, he was an admiral, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, but like, yeah, people saw it as like, "Who am I? Like, are you senile, sir?
Am I? Who are you?" He's a fascinating person, though. I mean, he was at the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which, like, is our excuse for going into Vietnam. Then he was a POW for a million jillion years, and he was horribly abused. And then he came out and, you know, as an admiral, and that's a hell of a fucking life, man. And then runs for vice president. And gets to be played by James Woods.
Wow.
Noted, sane, calm person, James Woods.
And then later on SNL by Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
Yes.
So who can say they've been played
crazy.
By both those
Gridlock.
Guys?
I've been played by Phil Hartman and James Woods. So I'll have to look into that. Maybe the devil.
Jesus. They've both been on The Simpsons.
Yeah, yeah.
The number of people where I'm from who voted for Perot would probably not surprise you. That's why Clinton was elected. Nothing really for video games because, again, NES is really slow right now. 87, by the middle and end of the year, things will start to heat up a lot, especially 88 is where you get into a lot more NES games. Sega Master System, never really big here. And that's all for games. So instead, a recent comment from one of our listeners, Chris Dobson, put in some comments.
Got Dobson here.
Nobody cares. a 1987 March quick blast of comic book information.
Ooh.
And none of these are particularly notable. Well, one of them is. One of them is Avengers 277, the finale of Under Siege storyline, where the Masters of Evil take over the Avengers mansion. Captain America sheds a tear after his only surviving photo of his mother is destroyed.
Aww.
Which is a touching story.
It's 1987, Xerox exists.
But that's the real photo from the moment, Dave. And he survived WW2. Batman number 405, issue 2 of year 1 by Frank Miller, featuring the iconic "Ladies, gentlemen, you have eaten well" scene as Batman confronts Gotham's mob.
Mm-hmm.
Superman number 3, obviously not the original Superman. Darkseid makes an early post-crisis appearance in John Byrne's run, transporting Clark Kent to his home planet. If that sounds impenetrable, it's not as wild as it sounds. And then Fantastic Four 300, a big milestone issue. Comic books love their issue 300s. Almost any comic that hit 300 in the 80s has like a big deal.
Yeah.
Spider-Man is Venom in the black costume and all that. Johnny Storm, the Human Torch, marries Alicia Masters, the Thing's on-again, off-again girlfriend.
Aww.
A relationship that started while Thing was off-planet.
Mm.
The Thing gives the two his blessing, an attempt to make Johnny stop being the baby of the team. And I think this is around when, or is caused by, the fallout of Secret Wars, when a bunch of characters got summoned into outer space, and Thing is like, "Yeah, I'll hang out in space for a while."
He got his own solo book.
He had his own solo book. I don't remember if that's before or after, but that kind of all is in this time period.
I mean, most of that took place in space. I just reading them all out of order, so I just assumed he was on Earth with the Fantastic Four.
Yeah. The top selling comic of the month, Uncanny X-Men. No surprise. Mm-hmm. This is like late 70s all through the 80s and early 90s is just you can't touch the X-Men. Music this week taking us out of the 80s, the Isley Brothers.
Really?
Smooth Sailing album, their 24th album. First without their third brother O'Kelly. I don't know who the Isley Brothers are, but it seems like you may have some fate.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you know, you've heard a ton of Isley Brothers songs. You just don't know it. I believe they did This Old Heart of Mine.
Oh, wow.
I'm Gonna Let It.
Wow. Branson, Missouri, the theme? I'm Gonna Let It Shine.
Is that the song?
No,
I was
not
joking.
I was saying the one you were singing.
This old heart of mine been broke a thousand times. Yeah. Each time you break away,
yeah.
I think you're gone to stay.
Okay. Yeah, I do know that song.
Yeah. That's a great song. Let's
isolate that and auto-tune it. Thank you.
Please auto-tune a lot. But still, I mean, we're talking about, like, they're basically like a doo-wop group from the, like, late 50s, and they're still releasing in 87?
24th album.
Wow.
It's the highest number, actually.
It is.
Huey Lewis and the News, Jacob's Ladder is number one. Mm. From their album 4, I do not remember this song. I listened to it and was like, I know a lot of Huey Lewis and the News songs, and this one... I never heard of my life. But we'll go out with Jacob's Ladder from Huey Lewis and the News 4 when we come back this week in 1997.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Harry Potter Weekend on Freeform, the channel that does whatever.
Oh, yeah.
We just kind of stopped because there was nothing else on. It was just a graveyard of garbage TV. So we're just like, this is the second time, because I think they did it again at Christmas, where I noticed they will play, here's Azkaban, here's Goblet of Fire, and next is Half-Blood Prince.
What?
They keep skipping Order of the Phoenix. And that's... It happened 3 times that I've watched this happen. And I'm like... I meant to look it up before we got here. Like, is there some reason that they keep skipping Order of the Phoenix?
Yes. But, so I just looked it up. Yeah. Apparently HBO has the rights to Order of the Phoenix.
Wow.
And, like, and 2 years ago, it was Goblet of the Fire that they would skip.
Goblet of the Fire. That's one geek demerit.
Okay.
Oh, but if Carolyn did tweet, I did in my sort of stomach, in my own stomach agony and confusion and a corona or two in, was like, oh, when's they switch the actors for Gandalf in the third movie? And
Hot Pie?
Like, did you just call Dumbledore Gandalf?
You did? Like, welcome to the Layer Cake Stop. Did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire? Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
Everybody loves this song.
I cannot hate this song. I really can't. But I like the Boston's before this album. At this point, I would see them like every 2 months, I think, this summer, because they would be on every tour.
Yeah.
God, I haven't bothered to listen to this again, but I love this album.
Yeah, this is Mighty Mighty Boston's Let's Face It. With their breakout album, fifth studio album, so they've been around, like you said, for a while.
Yeah.
This sold extremely well, and this song is still on the radio today.
It's so fun.
Yeah, it's like... This is when the whole ska sound is blowing up all over the radio, but this felt a little, I don't know, it didn't tick the same boxes for me as when I would hear Real Big Fish or whatever, and I would like, something about this warms my heart more.
It's still a real happy memory for me, and I'm not embarrassed. I listen to a lot of ska, so I have a lot to be embarrassed for.
I saw them, at the aforementioned Point Fest that I was at in 2001.
Warped Tour! I swam with Dickie, what's his name? He jumped in the pool with all of us. It was amazing.
What did that 311 hating kid think about Mighty Mighty Boston?
I assume he was not happy because he really wanted to see 311. The impression I got was that he wanted to see Slipknot real bad. And if he loved Slipknot, I don't know what he would think about the Boston's.
It is a weird crossover.
That's why that Weezer was there hot off the Green album.
And
they suck balls.
And both those bands combined are like 30 people.
Yeah. plus, goddamn, Stained was there. It was cold. What? Alien Ant Farm, what a show. But yeah, Boss Tones.
This will come up in a few months. But my most vivid memory of Mighty Mighty Boss Tones around this time is Chris Farley hosting SNL, and they're the musical guest, and he's just, "We got the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones," and doing his Matt Foley running,
fat jogging gesture.
And I remember Rascal King's another song for this one that was around a lot, and this was another one of my, again, working at Toys R Us and having to listen to all the awful music that was piped in. This is one of the songs that around 99, like the holiday of 99, remember like the first summer I worked there, it wasn't there. And then by Christmas time, this was finally in the rotation. I was like, thank God, a real song.
Yeah, and I think they made a minor breakthrough appearing in Clueless.
Oh.
Also
out this week, Still Waters, the Bee Gees' 21st album.
Wow.
And apparently sold 5 million copies, so people liked
Whoa.
It. And a Bee Gees album in 1997 that sold 5 million copies seems insane.
Still Waters. They're not moving. Where they're going. They're just staying still.
Doesn't work if you're not harmonizing with your kin.
That's more of a Scissor Sisters thing. Mm. Collective Soul's third album, Discipline Breakdown, comes out as well. And I missed, and I don't know how I missed this. I don't think I mentioned this back in February. Fuggin' Offspring's Ixnay and the Hombre came out.
Oh.
Which I only love for All I Want and Gone Away. But it's their fourth studio album after Smash, which was a huge hit. And Smash is like eighth grade the album for me. Like that and Dookie combined are like, you are an American teenager. These are the two albums you need. Go away.
With you.
All I Want was in Crazy Taxi, you probably remember. This sold about 3 million copies, Ixnay and the Hombre. And I remember getting the internet towards the end of 96. And in 97 is when I would find like video game music MIDI sites and like Godzilla fan sites, and one of them for like 12 years as soon as you went was a MIDI of Gone Away playing.
Beep beep boop.
Yep.
Beep beep boop.
But somehow I missed that. News this week, 1997, Paul McCartney is knighted.
Yay.
Hungy told me, well, that's not him, but
hope the armor's not too heavy.
What are the criteria for like
old? Be old.
Just old, and you did a lot of stuff that was good for the Britos.
Stuff that was nice
that brought good attention to the country.
Yeah, the queen cut you in the shoulders.
Yeah, you have to be able to kneel. That's the best point. Old, but not too old, because you can't do it while lying down.
Yeah. Have you done lots of good stuff? Have you not really fucked up too badly?
Is there anyone who's been knighted that's like really?
Sarah Gary Glitter.
Actually, there was the. Why am I blanking on his name? But he was, you know.
Describe him, Diana.
He was a TV presenter, children's shows and stuff. Did tons and tons of work for charity, and turns out, he was molesting all of those children, including disabled ones.
Is it Big Bird?
No, it's not Big Bird. Why am I? Jimmy Savile. Yeah, he had been knighted for all that charity work he was doing, and then he died, and then all the accusations came out.
Oh. So he wasn't knighted in light, despite all those things.
No, but I think like if you can take it away, I think they took it away.
Wow.
He's garbage. He's human filth.
Movies this week, March 10th to the 16th. Love Jones.
Love Jones.
Tate, directed by Theodore Witcher.
The only movie directed by Theodore Witcher. That's what I think is strange. He has one other writing credit, but his IMDb is barren. So I did go trying to track down an interview with him just to see what went on, because I didn't see Love Jones. It's just sort of like, it's like one of those background Simpsons characters at the elementary school that you just get used to seeing. And it's not Springfield Elementary unless Wendell's sitting there not saying something. That's Love Jones to me. It was on every video shelf. It was in every DVD section.
I remember one of the girls in the dorms, it was like her favorite movie. She loved it.
Well, it turns out it has a bunch of fans. And from the trailer, I can see why. It looks like some frank conversations with some young adult black people. And like the director's goal was to like, let's make an all African-American centric film that's not centered around drugs, poverty, crime. Yeah. This is like just like all those other cliches, but just like conversations about life and love.
Sounds good.
So I mean, I was already a little too young for it at that point. But
it's kind of ahead of its time, though. I mean, I feel like, you know, the Best Man's Holiday and stuff like that have crept into that market that people didn't realize was there. Like, black people go to the movies. Black people don't want to see a, you know, black movie about black themes. They just want to see a movie with people in it.
Yeah. They go on vacation and get their groove back.
And then, and they're not all a bunch of whitey whiters.
And in the interviews, it was like, well, I never made a movie again because, like, it turns out nobody wanted that kind of movie. Or nobody offered it. I couldn't sell one. And they wouldn't really bring me anything else because what can I do? Because I only made this low-key friend movie. There's a little clip of it. I've never seen it, but I know it has its fans.
Sometimes a man just want to be held, you know? Cuddled a little bit.
Please. Lorenz Tate. Nia Long. Lisa Nicole Carson. Isaiah Washington. And Bill Bellamy.
I just want to ask you, what type of underwear do you like?
In a film about making it.
All we ask is a little sex on demand.
What kind of underwear do you have on?
I don't wear drawers.
You don't have any on right now.
Breaking it.
Wave goodbye to your daddy, baby.
And putting it all together.
This is nothing serious.
Man, that music.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, Lawrence Tate. I like Nia Long. Mm-hmm. I like these people.
Yeah.
I might watch this now.
And the big movie out this week that everybody got out of the way of.
I love Jones.
On March 7th, return to the fight for freedom. In the name of adventure.
I'm Luke Skywalker.
I have a really bad feeling about this.
It's Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Special edition ending their 3-month blast of one in January, one in February, one in March. The special editions that we talked more about this when Star Wars came out in January. The restoration process for Return of the Jedi, a lot of it was just cosmetic stuff.
Ewoks can blink, thank God.
Though I think this has the most. I mean, the Jabba scene, the first one's bad, but this one I think has the most like. It's also the longest and most like. Aggravating addition to the prequel.
So yes, what used to be
I blocked it out. God damn it. I thought you were talking about the Ewok song at the end.
No.
I realize what you're talking about. I might have to leave.
The CG, it used to be a bunch of puppets, and they sang a song, and it was like kind of a throwaway thing, and you were like, oh yes, he would have some sort of lecherous entertainment in front of him. He's a giant slug. What else is he going to do?
But it's like a 70s, 80s pop song.
Sure. And it's short.
Yeah, it's short, it's generic, whatever.
But it's just like, it makes them the most kinetic characters in the entire series are now in this one band sequence because they're doing like backflips and moonwalking as opposed to like being yanked on strings.
Almost entirely new characters that are CG or played by actresses in elaborate costumes that, frankly, I love the costumes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're very bright, they're very vibrant. But this, I remember feeling hot red embarrassment. just the closest to shame. Like, for some reason, this and the opening of Knight's Tale are two movies that I was just like, oh, no. And then when Jar Jar Binks said, excuse me. Yeah. Those are the three moments in movies when I was like, I have to get out of here.
Yeah,
I'm so embarrassed. And it starts with this CG fucking trog asshole.
I call him Alien Joe Cocker.
And this... And do you want to watch rudimentary CG characters dance?
Strike to Jenna, Jesus. I do always forget about this.
God.
So this was the biggest warning about what was to come with the prequel trilogy.
It's like watching this, I'm like, no,
that's an excellent point.
No! Like it's just dumb. The whole movie is just like slam on the brakes and watch this cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, with unrelated everything happening around you.
This was the first time it's sort of like, oh, it's incidentally there's a band playing right now.
Yeah.
But there's kind of other stuff going on.
Yeah. And also one of the worst names in Star Wars history. Nice Noodles.
Nice Noodles.
So dumb.
And the song everything is called Jedi Rocks, by the way.
Yeah. It doesn't.
It doesn't.
But it's number one this week. That
such a bummer. I didn't even think to talk about it like a special edition. I missed the heyday of Star Wars fandom, and this is the only one that was released when I was alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw it in the theaters. I always loved it and didn't know the world thought ill of it until Clerks. Had no idea. I thought it was an amazing... I thought for a while it was the only Star Wars movie as a very little kid playing with a lightsaber.
Yeah, the thing said March 7th, but they changed the release date, so it was 14th. But
I have a very specific complaint about one of the changes in here. Well, two, really. When they said, oh, we're going to clean up the effects, I thought they would clean up the compositing with Luke and the Rancor. They kind of did. My big complaint is that they changed the end with the Ewok song. And show, like, all these other planets celebrating, which we've never seen before, but we will see them
it's
in
your
the
first
prequels.
Glimpse of course, the yeah. prequel right. planets.
Right. Well, you don't see the prequel planets, but
you don't?
See... Not
yeah, you
yet.
Do.
Not
you,
yet.
You do.
No, you do. You go see Coruscant, and you see some other planets.
Well...
In the,
technically, I guess Coruscant. You don't see Naboo and shit. Like
maybe
I think
you
they
do.
Add,
you see a couple.
You, yeah, you go to like places that see, trilogy had never been.
What
before.
You need to remember is they changed the scene again in 2004
right.
and changed it again. So I'm pretty sure in 97 you saw Coruscant the first time in theaters or in film, which had been like an extended universe thing and a game thing forever.
Okay,
but then you saw Bespin and you saw Tatooine.
Okay,
all going yay, the Empire's
gone.
Yeah,
you saw a bunch of stuff, and then they changed the music from the Ewok
nub.
Song, which is pretty cheesy, to what sounds like the Gypsy Kings playing with a pan flute.
I love that song so much.
And it's very pretty, and I like it as more of a it's sort of a calmer ending than the triumphant chorus of Ewoks.
Yeah.
But here's what bugs me. It bugs me because now Lando is not clapping with the rhythm. And that is so wrong to Billy Dee Williams.
The smoothest guy in the universe.
And that, he just is clapping like a moron now.
That happens with the Jabba scene. I think there's the dude, the giant blue elephant on the keyboard or whatever. I think there's a scene in the original movie, or there's someone hitting little xylophone things or something in the original 83 one. It's in tune with what's happening, and then in the new one, they're just hitting things, and it's not reflected by the new sounds that
they put
in.
Important. And it's, fuck over Max Rebo.
But the Sarlacc pit now has a beak.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So now you know it's dangerous.
There are a lot of egregious things. I forget that.
That doesn't need to be there.
And it, and they are at least, like, I don't know. It's not like Han Solo stepping over Jabba the Hutt where you're just like, good God, can we get out of here? But it's still just like, you did it good the first time. And granted, Lucas didn't direct this film anyway in 83, but it's still just like, stop fucking with
it. Because I forget, I was going to bring up, and they also added in, but I think they, remember Darth Vader's awful no from Revenge of the Sith? They added that into Jedi, I think in just the Blu-rays.
Oh,
they had, like, when he throws the Emperor.
That's the same time that they added Hayden Christensen to the Ghost.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So at this point, it's still Sebastian whatever, Sebastian Shaw, which I swear is an X-Men villain.
The current Palpatine was added in? I can't even remember now.
And then they, and then there's also Weesa did it, like, during that final scene after... after the Emperor is overthrown, like, they go to all the planets, and you can hear the Gungans celebrating. It's like, no.
It's such a weird... In hindsight, knowing what we know now, that this is George Lucas saying, I don't want to do this anymore. And it's just a weird, abrupt ending. Like, set the villain on fire. Triumphing planets. Let's never hear from these people again. Great. And, like, it's a very strange send-off.
Yeah, it's weird. I was thinking about this a little bit in context of, like, I do a lot of DIY stuff. You know, I've been building some shit. I built some shelves and building shit and sewing shit and all that. And part of my problem is, like, everyone else can't see the flaws, but I can still see the flaws. I still see that paint smear right there. And no one else can see it. And so, like, I have to learn to, you know, just let it go. This is the good enough version. It's not perfect, but it's good enough.
Describe everything the Laser Time Network does.
And so it's like, I kind of understand that, like, I want to change this. No, wait, I want to do that. No, but is it just... It's like, no, but except it's not just George Lucas sitting up late at night. It's hundreds of people having to do this. So just, you gotta let it go. You know, bring a couple friends in, show it to them, and if they don't pick it out in 30 seconds, it's fine.
It's fine. And I always said,
I thought that hole in the ground needed a beak.
I don't envy him. There's that great special feature on the DVD for Phantom Menace, and it's just... It's him surrounded by hundreds of yes men whose continued careers depend on saying yes to everything George Lucas says and not questioning any of it.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't have anybody to bounce anything off of. I feel, I don't know, pity him.
For what it's worth, though, as I didn't see Star Wars till 93 because I totally missed it. And
I saw Jedi a bunch of times over and over again.
And like when I finally watched them, I think I probably saw the middle and end of Jedi first. And I was like, this is awesome. And then, Jedi struck with me early on.
I still love Endor, the look of Endor. And we live amongst those trees now that we live in North California. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I love the speeder bikes, the Scout Trooper. I love that helmet. I love
ATST,
the
at-sit assholes.
The three-pronged attack at the end is really fun for a kid. It just Phantom Menace then decides, you got it. Well, we should have four.
Yeah, and I'm,
it's
I'm
like,
one of those
this
people.
Is too many things to follow at once. And for what it's worth, three is a little much already to have three climaxes.
They get a little redundant.
Yeah.
But just people complaining about Ewoks, whereas a kid, like, I couldn't love these things more.
Yeah.
I couldn't love Wicket more. At the time, I didn't see that. I do now. I guess
it's like
an objective film goer, but like it was kind of a shock to me as a teenager to find out people older than me hated the Ewoks.
I mean, I didn't see it until I was 13.
Part of the reason is something you just said. They're Ewoks. You know that one's name is Wicket. That's not said in the movie. That's all marketing, baby.
Yeah, it's true. That's very true.
Yeah, and it's like, I didn't see it until I was, again, like 13. And the Ewoks, I was like, yeah, I don't hate them. It's just like, I don't buy that they can throw rocks hard enough to knock a grown man over, but that's fine. Okay. And what is the point of wearing a helmet if a rock thrown by a teddy bear incapacitates you?
I do love the implication of having your body torn apart by tiny bears. Like, it's just sort of all over the finale.
Yeah. But what was the deal in the original 83 one? This was supposed to be Kashyyyk, and it was supposed to be Wookiees.
Yeah,
it was
supposed to be an all-Wookiee planet and decided to make them smaller, and that's where Ewoks come, like, literally like a fucking Silicon Valley name for Ewoks. Ewookiees, Ewoks. That's where that came from.
But that's like one of my favorite moments when the Chewbacca and the Ewoks are in the AT-ST. They're like, shoot stuff. And one of the Ewoks just starts petting him like, I love you, Chewbacca. You're the best. Yeah. He's like, aw, you're my friend. I love you.
But it's fun. I liked Mark Hamill's turn into, like, he completes his journey and is much more Jedi-like and stately. And you can really see him changing from being a whiny brat in the first movie, more or less, to he's learned his lessons. He's grown up and... You get to see Yoda fade into the distance and all that. I don't know.
However the Hello Jedi dies. I'm still not clear on it.
It's not clear. But I don't know. As a movie itself, I'm really enjoyable.
Cursed to walk the earth forever?
I can only engage in monologues.
Then the seagulls will bite your knees. No? No one watch that?
No.
The bad lip reading?
No,
we might have to... Well, we're at the end of this. I'm going to have to show you all the bad lip reading again.
TV this week.
Big week in TV.
Oh, boy.
Going to start out with a blockbuster. March 10th, 1997, Buffy the Vampire Slayer debuts on the WB.
Damn.
Whoa.
So, yeah, adapted from the 1992 movie, which is also written by Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
It has a much darker edge, includes more teen drama, with better written teen drama.
And
like
includes
all
a bunch
drama.
Of. Yes. Right in the pilot, when she's talking to the principal, she's exclaiming a bunch of things that were cut out of Joss Whedon's movie script.
Oh, really?
Which was sort of.
Yeah, here's the femme. So this went for 7 seasons, 144 episodes. I sadly didn't really watch much of it. Because it was like WB.
Too.
I was like, that channel was kind of... Especially at this point, it's like, well, I can't even watch like The Parenthood anymore. What am I going to watch on this channel? No Happily Ever After?
It's an amazing show. I caught it. I fell in love with Firefly. I'm like, well, who's this Joss Whedon guy? And went back to Buffy, and it's amazing. It looks terrible and may never look better.
Yeah.
That's really disappointing. It is stuck in 360p video forever, and there is a lot of dark scenes in full frame that look terrible.
Though, like, in retrospect, I totally should have been watching this show. Because, like, just that theme, it's like...
The theme is great. I didn't watch this again until post-Firefly.
It's great.
I watched, I think, the first three seasons, which all tell one kind of straight story leading to... The mayor of the town, or the principal of the school,
fun,
or whatever.
Man.
And then after that, I didn't.
Well, it's like when they have to get them out of high school, and they spend like like half a season. Like, okay, now they're in college. You know what? Fuck this.
Yeah.
They're fighting off demons to save the world. They don't go to school anymore. The situation gets that dire.
Yeah, but it's an episodic like X-Files-y thing where some episodes are fighting kind of a monster of the week or curse of the week or zombie
vampire
of the week.
Of the week.
And then, or there's a bigger overarching thing about, hey, did you know this town in Southern California is over the Hellmouth, a confluence of supernatural energy that's going to swallow humanity?
Yeah, I feel like I kind of wrote it off as just like, yeah, whatever, some sort of teen blah, blah, blah. You know, I figured it was like 90210 meets X-Files, I don't care. And then, you know, many years later, I found, oh, well, it knows that I think that, and it's smarter than that a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's kind of, it's on my list of, like, I should probably just go binge this.
I did it while playing Grand Theft Auto. Because some of the scenes are very hard to watch, but the dialogue is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's Whedon.
It's Whedon, and I just also love the idea that the show has continued on in comic books ever since, up until this last year.
It was like the first...
7 seasons on television, and the comic was called Buffy the Vampire Season 8. And it starts with her jumping out of a plane. I don't want to spoil how the series ends, but it's awesome.
It's the ending sucks for the show, right? Isn't it just like, we'll keep fighting?
No, it's
kind of the.
It's kind of she activates every potential Slayer in the universe, and they form a. And in the comics, they form a league of Slayers, and the first panel is Buffy and a team of Slayers diving out of a fucking plane to go stab monsters.
And I mean, this launched the careers of a lot of like big teen stars of the '90s, like Sarah Michelle Gellar, Allison Hannigan, David Boreanaz, Seth Green.
Oh, Captain Bones.
Captain Bones.
Who got his own show as Angel after this.
Yeah,
Sex Pilot.
Spin off of Angel and the... oh, man, I forget Xander's name. But he's only famous for me because he made my...
James Marsters?
He brought my town up again because he got arrested for drunken misbehavior in Tallahassee, Florida, like 2 years ago.
Must have been bitten by a vampire.
Hey.
Is there any other kind of misbehavior in Tallahassee, Florida?
I'm probably guilty of whatever he did.
They also had two good original Xbox games.
Yeah, not bad, actually.
Yeah. Big turn here. March 12th, 1997, the news radio episode Twins airs... And I've been late with the news radio episodes because I think like almost all of them have something hilarious. But I do love this one because it's got a great guest star and Andy Dick at his dumbest. So it's about Andy Dick's supposed twin brother, who's played by Jon Stewart. And here's a clip of them. Wow. Here's a clip of Matthew introducing the station to his twin brother.
Hey, these are my coworkers, Andrew. Did you have a good flight?
Yes, I did, Matthew. Wow. What neat coworkers you have.
Yeah, they're nice. Welcome to New York.
Oh, I've never been here in China. I'm sorry. It's me. I'm Matthew. That's Andrew.
Gotcha!
That's awesome.
And to compound the whole thing that they don't even look remotely alike, they have different color sweaters on. And they do the whole like mix up, like switch, trying to switch sides. It's so dumb, but I just...
Seeing double, four dicks.
Yes.
This was such a fun show.
Yeah.
Which I think we talked about a little bit more last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But might or not at Laser Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was, just every week it gets sillier and weirder, pretty much.
More classic sitcom stuff this week. The next night, March 13th, 1997, the Friends episode, The One with the Hypnosis Tape, has two debuting guest stars.
Mm-hmm.
One is Deborah Jo Rupp, who is best known as the mother from That 70s Show.
Right.
She plays the new wife of Giovanni Ribisi's character, who he plays Phoebe's brother.
Mm.
And he's getting
married
to Deborah Jo Rupp, who is like, her character is like 25 years older than him. And eventually they need Phoebe to be a surrogate mother because Deborah Jo Rupp's too old to give birth. And the other notable guest star debuting in this episode is Jon Favreau, who plays Monica's rich suitor, who eventually moves, he leaves her so he can become an MMA fighter, and a terrible one at that.
Oh, yeah.
But the other must-see TV show of this evening was the Seinfeld episode, The English Patient. It introduced Lloyd Bridges as Izzy Mandelbaum, he's part of the family that antagonizes Jerry, even though they're very old and brittle.
Yes,
But the main thrust of the episode is, as the title indicates, Elaine hating the English Patient, and here she is at the movie theater blowing up about it.
And I think we talked about this last year when the English Patient came out.
Yes. I may have actually used this
for
exact
everybody
same
but
clip.
Diana. It's
probably
our only frame of reference.
But it's good. It's been months, I'm sure.
Yes.
This is Seinfeld. Mm-hmm.
Elaine, I hope you're watching the close because I can't take my eyes off the passion.
No, I can't do this anymore. I can't. It's too long. Quit telling your stupid story about the stupid desert and just die already. Die!
Shh. Elaine, you don't like the movie?
I hate it! I'll go to hell!
Why didn't you say so in the first place? You're fired.
Great, I'll wait for you outside.
So one other big sitcom this week, the Simpsons episode Homer versus the 18th Amendment airs, where Homer becomes a bootlegger after Prohibition happens in Springfield, and it features a one-time only appearance, Dave Thomas as the Prohibition enforcing detective Rex Banner.
Founder of Wendy's?
Ooh. Yeah.
No. SCTV's Dave Thomas.
Yes.
Are you the
beer baron?
Well, if you're talking about root beer, I plead guilty as char-diddly-arged.
He's not the baron, but he sounds drunk. Take him in. Are you the beer baron?
Yes, but only by night. By day, I'm a mild-mannered reporter for a major metropolitan newspaper.
Don't crack wise with me, Tubby.
Tubby? Oh, yes, Tubby.
Hey, Banner, how's it hanging?
None of your business.
That's a I did not know that was Dave Thomas, actually, because he's doing a real great job as an old gruff
but, I mean,
Prohibition guy.
Yeah, the first act is Bart getting drunk, and then just Homer being a beer kingpin is hilarious. Mm. Like,
and I just love the thing of his... the
I'm going to catch you. No, you won't.
And just the piles of it blowing up in the basement. He's trying to cover it by just going, boom, bang, pow.
Boom, I love you.
Oh, excuse me. It's like, we know that's not you.
Yes. The same night on Fox, the X-Files episode Tempest Fugit airs. I didn't put this in here. I'm guessing you did, Brett.
I put it in here only because we haven't talked much about X-Files, and I don't really remember. I remember this episode, but it's like, it opens with this creepy airplane abduction that I remember seeing and being like, Jesus Christ, that's creeping me out. But this is around when I forget which aspects of the mythology really start like cooking. But things that lead into the fourth, fifth season and stuff, and the movie, like a lot of this stuff starts to coalesce now. But I guess you put in a clip of the
promo.
What happened to Flight 549?
You ever seen anything like this?
Where's the plane?
The truth.
From the sound of the tape, the plane may have been forced down.
By who? By what?
Will shock you.
Are you accusing these men of covering evidence?
A brand new X-Files.
I'm not going to make it.
Sunday at 9, 8 Central on Fox.
No. But yeah.
Sunday.
It's just one of those that stood out to me when I saw it at the time.
And only one TV movie this week. HBO aired the comedy film The Second Civil War.
Dude, I've been trying. Phil Hartman plays the president.
Yes.
I've been trying to find this. This has never been released on DVD.
Yeah. It's a movie about the anti-immigration sentiment in America. Huh. And it's like a weird version of America where like immigration is so open that like every state has their own like refugee kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, well, I mean, you can hear it in the clip with Phil Hartman, where they describe like President Phil Hartman can like keep his electoral college votes high,
and cross every racial T. And what do we get? The goddamn Chinese, our goddamn Chinese, for Christ's sake, side with that prick Farley and his rednecks. Is this what it's all about? Sitting at the bottom of the goddamn melting pot when it's all boiled away and there's nothing left but lumps.
Well, you can always renege on that deal with Kini Nkomo and that Nation of Islam group.
Jeez, how many electoral college votes do they control?
Oh, 60, 70 on a good day.
How about the Koreans?
Oh, I don't know, 26?
There's your answer.
Well, no, not necessarily. We could let in a million more Koreans, jack up the electoral votes to 80... And bingo, you've got him eating chop suey right out of your hand.
And it's got a really stellar cast. James Earl Jones, Dennis Leary, Beau Bridges, and probably one of his final roles, Phil Hartman. I mean, we're starting to get there. Small Soldiers, the last one, but...
Dennis Leary was also in this film. Yep. Ron Perlman.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I've never heard of this, despite...
I mean, it was just on HBO once, and like, when else?
Wow.
Yeah.
Because I, like, knew Phil Hartman. Mr. Show was going at this time. Like, I'm surprised.
Right, I was really bummed, because he's, like, barely in the movie, and he's the president.
And that's it for TV this week.
Games this week, not a lot. Still, PS1's quiet. N64 is, again, the notorious drip feed of games. NBA Shootout 97 came out around this time. I did not play 97. I guess I played the first NBA Shootout, which was part of Sony's first-party sports games. Yeah. And I played NHL Face-Off, the first one of that, a lot. After that came out at the end of 95, I think, a friend and I got really into that, and we played, like, every day.
Yeah.
And then he moved, and as usually happens when you're a kid, if the friend you played sports games with leaves, I no longer care about sports and forget everything I ever learned. So we did rent the NBA Shootout, and it was, you know, a rudimentary polygonal...
Like, during this time, like, Sony's... Right now, they only have one sports game they make anymore, which is MLB The Show. Mm-hmm. But back then, they had NBA Shootout, NHL Face-Off, MLB, I think it was Pennant Race back then.
Oof.
And I think
The football 99's
no game day. Yeah, so they were all big games.
And this is all pre 989 even. Like,
yeah, but once 989 took over and it went to the PlayStation 2, that's when it was just like, you do it, EA. Like we can't. It's too hard.
Yeah, and the only thing I remember about NBA Shootout was you could like detach the camera in sort of a replay mode and move the camera freely, and the controls were so weird, and there was no analog stick yet because this is a pre-Ape Escape world for PlayStation, by the way. So there's no analog sticks, and I remember getting the camera so lost in the stadium that it was just we're literally in the rafters.
Yeah. You're in the bathroom, just some guy's like, hey, get out of here.
And like my
it's friend Pac-Man on the toilet, why?
And my friend and I genuinely trying, like, no, turn it, no, left. Well, no, use the X-axis and go, look, just go all the way down, bam, hit like a transformer or something. And it's like, why did they model all this shit in the sky to get caught on with a camera that shouldn't be allowed to go above the fucking field.
Spin the mezzanine section top-wise.
Yes, it was just like, and I was like, we are never running this game again, it is tearing this house apart. But also, to follow up, to take us out of the 90s, more about comics in March 1997. From the same comment, JLA number 3, Grant Morrison's JLA continues its first arc with new heroes revealed to be villains who capture Superman and laugh off the threat of Batman. Speaking of Batman, The Long Halloween number 4 comes out as Batman fights the Joker on New Year's Eve as part of year one continuity. I do love The Long Halloween.
It's great.
Marvel bankruptcy proceedings are more interesting than the comics as the company continues to try to find a buyer after filing for Chapter 11. Spawn and Curse of the Spawn are both in the top 10 in sales. Yeah, mid-90s, definitely big for Spawn and Image. Top selling is X-Men number 62. The X-Men go to Hong Kong and meet Shang-Chi. Do not remember this one. I was definitely tapped out of comics by 97. I just got... Man, all again.
You were a sports boy now. You like NBA Shootout?
That's a total jock. But we'll go out with Gone Away, and when we come back this week, 2007.
Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth watching. March 10th through the 16th, it's okay, I guess. 75 years ago this week, March 13th, 1942, we had The Ghost of Frankenstein. And then 25 years later, 50 years ago this week, March 15th, 1967, we got Frankenstein Created Woman, which is the fourth in the Hammer Horror series of Peter Cushing. It's kind of a weird one, so I sort of almost recommend it. If you're not, you know, haven't seen any of the Hammer or Frankenstein or Dracula movies, I'd start with Christopher Lee Dracula, but, you know, whatever. Also out that day, In Like Flint with James Coburn, that we just heard in that last segment, it's the second of his Bond parody films. Our Man Flint, the original one, is better, but In Like Flint is pretty hilarious in that it might be the most sexist movie ever made without really intending to be, because it's about how these kooky dames are trying to take over the planet, and then he's gotta go stop them with swinging and dancing and kissing and fighting and whatever. Those movies are hilarious. You know, if you want to see where Austin Powers gets it, it's straight out of the Flint movies. But my big recommend this week is not a movie, and it's not even an album that was very, very popular at the time, but it is so goddamn important, and number 13 on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums of All Time, Velvet Underground and Nico, released 50 years ago this week, March 12th, 1967. This is just an incredible album. It's one of those, it's like, I think the cliche is people say, like, 500 people bought this album, but they all started great bands. It's so weird and interesting, and you know, it's Lou Reed, Velvet Underground, Nico, who sounds like a robot doing a Marlene Dietrich impersonation. They are very downbeat and odd and spooky and weird and Warhol arty, and it's just not like really anything else you've heard. So I'm gonna recommend Velvet Underground and Nico. I really love that album, and that's it for this week. Stay classic.
That is Typo Negative, coming in with Blood and Fire. So the new album this week is called Dead Again. Frontman Peter Steele would die of an aortic aneurysm in 2010. So this is their final album, from Typo Negative. But Peter Steele's interesting. Posed for Playgirl 95. Was just like really like had a lot nice. Of like fun. I don't know. But Typo Negative is just one of those bands that I followed for a while. The song Bring Us In is from the Mortal Kombat 1995 soundtrack, which I keep mentioning about why this soundtrack really did a great job of, like, I don't know what it did for Mortal Kombat as a brand, but it definitely, like, it tied, like, are you into a video game where you rip people's hearts out? You'll probably like Gravity Kill, Sister Machine Gun, Tracy Lords, KMFDM, Fear Factory, and Typo Negative. I'm just going to roll the dice on this. And they were right, and that's how I found all these bands, and that's what Bringing Us In is... Blood and Fire, but if you're a type, this is one of those bands I did not dig into non like big songs that people back always listen to this. If you're a fan and have like specific songs that you remember, please share them in the comments on 302010.net because I would like to hear more of them. But Dead Alive is out this week in 2007, as well as live / compilation stuff from Dokken, Neil Young, and the Doobie Brothers. Number one song this week is This Ain't a Scene, It's an Arms Race from Fall Out Boy, which I could have played but didn't.
I kind of like that song.
I'm sure it's fine. There's actually a lot of Fall Out Boy songs at the time I liked, and I just haven't bothered to go back and listen to
it. Yeah, I like anything that's got a beat that's a stomping beat. You have to stomp to it. There's no toe tapping. You must stomp this.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it's fine. I don't mean it as like a, that band sucks. It's more just like a, I enjoyed it then, and then it's one of the bands I just never went back to, and I'm scared I won't like it
we've
if I go back.
We've done a couple hate songs and shame songs, and Fall Out Boy doesn't really seem to pop up, so...
That's true.
It's that people aren't ashamed of liking them or hate them,
yeah,
so...
I don't hate
I think they're in a good spot.
I don't wish ill upon them.
Yeah.
Movies this week, Dead Silence, the Saw creators...
James Wan coming back for... Just play the clip, it's Saw, it's...
There's an old ghost story around here about a woman named Mary Shaw.
The ventriloquist who lost her voice.
That's it. It's a movie about dummies that kill people, I think. I have not seen this.
Isn't Saw about a dummy that kills people?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Not specifically.
A dummy that is being...
But not a curse of a ventriloquist.
Yeah.
Why do I recognize that old man?
I don't know.
Oh, he's in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's one of those that guys.
He's a total hate that guy. Yep.
But yeah, Dead Silence, I think it just came out and disappeared.
The better Dead Silence is Resident Evil Deadly Silence.
That's what I typed in first, trying to research this.
And this was, the theater was dead silent because there's no one in it.
Yeah, didn't do very well. It did fare pretty poor with critics and audiences.
And then Chris Rock had a new film called I Think I Love My Wife.
Let me hear that clip.
But there's only one way to make it right.
I feel like it's my fault. Bet we're not as close as we used to be.
It's not your fault. It's my fault.
I love my wife. I love my wife. I love my wife. I think I love my wife. I'm not even turning around.
As someone who loves Chris Rock so much, I wish I could say better things about this movie, but I did not like it. It is the... Empire Strikes Back of the Chris Rock director trilogy. He did what'd he do? Head of State, Bernie Mac, where he's the president, this movie, and then Top Five.
Okay.
Top Five, but this is based on a French film called Chloe in the Afternoon, and I love that it was co-written by Chris Rock's long-standing friend, but not yet mega-famous Louis C.K.
Wow.
Not the first time... Chris Rock would remake a European film, Death at a Funeral. So, another
Chris Rock starred in a movie that Louis C.K. wrote and it was not good.
Yeah, same thing, but the same. You could say the same about Pootie Tang that Louis C.K. directed and Chris Rock was in briefly.
Pootie Tang's pretty funny.
I think Pootie Tang's great. But but this is just like the whole premise is like, we've been married and have a kid and I'm kind of bored and I want to cheat on my wife and do what? And it's just hard to like, so what, man?
Just like, the name itself sounds like,
He's married to Gina Torres.
Gina Torres.
Yeah, for real.
Dude!
Zoe from Firefly.
No, this should be called My Husband Does Not Deserve Me.
Wait, is he married to Zoe, or is Zoe from Firefly the girl he's
married to?
No, he's married to Gina
Zoe.
Torres.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure. for
this,
sure.
It's this just pops up on TV almost every weekend.
Does it?
Yeah, weird. I keep seeing it like pretty in the deep channels, but it pops up.
I love Chris Rock. I just think he's one of the worst actors I've ever seen in my whole life. But I did. I like Top Five a little more.
Now I hate this movie even more because he stole her from Wash.
Yeah.
Wash or she should still be mourning Wash.
Yeah.
Well, time has passed.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You gotta move on. He wanted to move on.
Yeah, that is true.
As well as Premonition, a Sandra Bullock movie.
Yeah.
The first to be, which this seemed weird, in 2007, allegedly, according to the wiki, the first movie to be co-distributed by TriStar and MGM. That's not a big deal, but it just seems like, really? That's like the first time this ever happened?
Well, right. They were both, I feel like TriStar had died and come back already, and then MGM had been flirting with bankruptcy for years.
Yeah, one was coming back and one was dying. Yeah.
10 years later, are either their own distributors anymore? No,
yes.
Right? Really?
I think so, because TriStar distributed Evil Dead, the Evil Dead remake alone, and MGM, I think, they're like, they coast on the Bond series, but that's been co-distributed by Sony for the entire Craig era.
Yeah, they've pretty much been Bond.
But it's some movie about like she's premonished her husband's death and is experiencing it out of order and has to like put the pieces together, and it's like it's like that's an interesting premise, but
it got awful reviews. The best thing about it's the poster. I remember seeing the poster and being like, oh neat, because it's like the trees sort of make Sandra Bullock's face,
and like the poster looked neat, and I like Sandra Bullock just fine. But I had never heard of this till I looked on the internet today.
I remember when it came out and seeing the poster and being like, huh, wonder what that's about, and then reading the reviews and went, oh, that sounds bad.
Never mind. TV. That's all for movies. It was quite weak.
Well, following up on all of the Simpsons stuff in the last segment, two Fox animated shows had episodes of importance this week on March 11th. The Family Guy episode Bill and Peter's Bogus Journey has Peter Griffin becoming friends with former President Bill Clinton. Here's a scene where they're both high.
Dude, check it out. There's a pig behind that fence.
Oh, yeah, I see it.
Dude, we could eat that pig.
What?
Dude, come on. We could totally eat that pig. We could do it, man. We could. It'd be so easy, man. It would take like a minute.
Could it really be that fast?
Peter, that pig could be in our stomachs in like 1 minute, and then we could do other stuff.
All right, I'm starved. Let's do it.
And I believe he fucks Lois at the end.
Yes.
Of it, right?
So, the main plot of the episode is that Bill Clinton fucks Lois. Lois feels bad and says, "You can cheat on me." In retaliation, he chooses her mother, who basically looks just like her, but like 20 years older. And is close to doing it, but he decides, I don't want to do it. I love Lois, and I forgive you. But then he ends up fucking Bill Clinton, too.
Yep. He's just so charismatic.
Yes. And this is going to be one of the rare times that
only
we had
president because of Ross Perot.
Man. And then he fucked everybody in America, and we all love him so much.
He fucked us so hard into that government surplus.
Yeah.
Man.
Mm-hmm. I meant, like, literally, like, we all had sex with him.
Okay.
Yeah, not like, okay.
Yep.
But also... And this is going to be one of the rare times that we talk about The Simpsons in two different segments.
Mm.
But the same night, The Simpsons episode Romy Old and Julie airs. And
we've said on Talking Simpsons, the worst thing about the show is the titles.
Yeah.
They're always bad.
Well, this is another thing about The Simpsons that kind of got annoying. It's another episode where Selma has another suitor. And in this case, it's Abraham Simpson. And I think they get married, or they get close to getting married. They move in together, but it's just like this is the 15th season, because this is a premise that you come up with in the 15th season, like throwing two darts, like Selma, Grandpa.
No.
Okay, now they're together. Why?
Is this the 18th season?
I think it's the 15th season. I'm not sure. No, it'll be 18th.
It'll be 10 years from now, and they're 28th.
Yeah. Wow, just with that title, I thought it was another one of these just random episodes, which is. Mrs. Skinner and comic book guy.
Oh,
yeah.
See, I thought it was going to be another flashback episode. Because those are the ones that tend to anger fans the most, even who aren't watching, is when they do another flashback episode but have to put Homer in. That 90s show is the one.
It takes a pretty big effort for me to remember a Simpsons season 18 episode.
Yeah.
So that I remember this one. That's why.
Can't wait to get to it. TalkingSimpsons.com. Be there in 6 years.
More notable.
That show's going to become like a funeral every week. This week.
It's gonna warp from something that's beautiful and amazing into like that show those guys were doing where they watch Grown Ups 2 every day.
More notable animation this week is the South Park episode Cartman Sucks. So Cartman doesn't realize that taking a picture with a sleeping Butters penis in his mouth makes Cartman look gay. So in order to get back at Butters, he conspires to put his penis in Butters' mouth. But he also is paranoid that this picture that he took of himself with Butters' penis in his mouth will get around the school. So he tries to have the picture squashed and like not distributed, and it leads to one scene where he's at the police station trying to he thinks that Kyle has stolen it and he's trying to report Kyle.
Okay, what is the picture of?
Why does that matter?
Well, how are we gonna find your picture unless we know what it is?
All right, it's a picture of me.
Yes?
It's a picture of me and what appears to be a penis in my mouth.
You were sucking somebody's penis.
No, I was not. I was asleep, and this person just put their penis in my mouth without me knowing and took the picture.
I see.
Yes. Now, it may appear in the picture that I'm actually looking at the camera lens and smiling with the penis in my mouth and giving a thumbs up. But I assure you, I was fast asleep.
Well, we'd have to get a warrant first, approved by a grand jury.
I don't have time for that! We have school tomorrow, and I know that Kyle's going to show the picture to everybody during show and tell.
Well, then, you're screwed.
Very weird episode, but still just, so dumb and fun. Other noteworthy things on TV this week, March 12th, 2007, The Riches debuts on Showtime.
Oh, yeah.
Starred Eddie Izzard and Minnie Driver as the mother and father of a family of con artists who, I guess they accidentally run over a family who, like a couple who's rich, mm-hmm. and they just assume their lifestyle.
Yeah.
And so it ran for like 2 seasons, but Eddie Izzard and Minnie Driver, like that, I'm curious.
Both
just
playing
by
Americans.
That. Yeah. ending this week on March 13th, 2007 was Stargate SG-1.
Good, so we can finally get Atlantis in there.
Yeah, after 10 years, the episode Unending airs, where the crew's beamed into an uninhabited planet and trapped in a time dilation field. They spend over 50 years trapped, and one member has to stay and sacrifice themselves in that trap to reverse time.
Oh, no.
I forgot.
Does MacGyver do it?
I don't know.
That's but this is like pre-internet streaming, and there's mm-hmm. a 10 season Stargate series nobody knows anything about.
Yeah.
Tyler's mother,
obviously, it has fans.
My old roommate, his mother would buy him every year a new season of Stargate SG-1, and we have a pristine sealed stack of Stargate SG-1. Because Atlantis is the only one you need to bother with.
Yeah, but when you line them all up together, you get the famous ship from Stargate, right? I don't know what it is.
How does that even happen? But Stargate, the movie sucks.
There's multiple Stargate series.
Yes,
really.
I made a joke about it in one of the videos we made.
Yeah, they've gone on for years, and the movie is not great.
Literally decades.
And again, I was so into I watched every Star Trek there was, and
I couldn't have wanted to love it more.
And there was. Just I watched one Stargate and was like, I don't care, and never watched it again. And no one I knew growing up watched it. To this day, I don't know a single person who is like, I watched every episode.
We are dorks, even sci-fi dorks. Yeah. I don't know anybody who's seen the show,
and I don't know. Is it good? Maybe it is. I have no clue.
It's no Farscape or Kevin Sorbo's Andromeda. It's all right.
I'm a Time Tracks man.
I'm a tech war guy.
Lex all the way, baby.
Last and least this week, March 15th, 2007. Andy Barker, PI, debuts on Fox. This is Andy Richter's third attempt at a sitcom. One of them lasted 2 seasons,
that's right.
Which was Andy Richter Controls the Universe. Then there was Quintuplets, which only lasted a season. This one only lasted, I think, 8 episodes. I can't remember, but I have a clip of, this is the DVD trailer, but it does a really good job describing the show.
It's a great show.
I'm Andy Barker. I'm a private eye accountant combination. I've got a few questions for you.
Andy Barker PI, the complete series, starring Andy Richter.
Oh, Mother Hubbard.
And from the hilarious minds of Conan O'Brien and Jonathan Groff.
We got business.
Slip on your garter and act like a man.
When mistaken for a retired private detective, earnest, hardworking CPA Andy Barker dives into a ridiculously off-the-wall double life.
You're an accountant, Andy Barker. You go where the numbers take you.
You just need to bring the thunder and the lightning.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
The show's really good. When they say complete series, it's 6 episodes.
Oh my, yeah.
I love that it is produced.
One DVD.
It's produced by Conan's company. It's showing that there was no bad blood the entire time.
I mean, within like 2 years, he'd be back with Conan again.
Yep. This is a really fun show. Yeah. And if you can, I don't know if it's on Hulu or not, but it's really good.
Where does it rank among the three shows?
I'm kind of dying to go back. Mm-hmm. Everything's better than Quintuplets. How about that?
Okay.
I'm dying to go back to Controls the Universe.
Because isn't that five?
I love that show
is
at the time.
Five. Andy Richter's in Quintuplets, or more than one? Am I thinking
else? That's Arrested Development, where that's the joke, because Andy Richter's on a show called Quintuplets, so in Arrested Development, there's five different Andy Richter brothers.
Okay. And this is Tony Hale.
It's like, if you're watching Arrested Development, you will not understand why this is happening.
This is Tony Hale right off of Arrested Development. Didn't that end in 2006?
Like a year, yeah.
The irony.
Veep's in the horizon, dude. Don't worry. But yeah, that's TV for the week.
Video games, Ratchet and Clank Size Matters comes to PSP. I think debuts on PSP and then comes to PS2 in a year. The Ratchet and Clank games are all fine. Like, they're cute and fun, and I always had fun with them. I think I played through one of them.
Can't distinguish one from the other.
That was the thing, is I played through one and then like jumped in like two later and was like, I think I already did this, and I couldn't really tell.
They're all wiener puns, so you can't tell them apart.
But this is a PSP one, so at the time, 2007, it was a way to get a handheld one. And the way you would get certain equipment upgrades was different, so it at least felt a little... The flow of it felt a little different. I didn't play this one, but remember it came out and people were like, this is fine. Call of Duty Roads to Victory. Mm-hmm. We're still in a pre-Modern Warfare Call of Duty 4 world, so this is still World War II. Mm-hmm. A PSP, pretty assy first-person shooter, and I remember having to review back as bad as
this.
Did you
review this or did I? I can't remember.
I didn't review this one, but I had to review a lot of DS and PSP. Like, the thing that I loathe the most about DS and PSP games was anytime, especially PSP, when they would try to cram a PS2 or console experience onto that machine with just a hilariously diminished polygon count or, like, the textures or the details of the environments are just so stripped down where it's like, the point of this is now gone. You needed to make a different game. Yeah. Like, it didn't have to be 3D.
The cinematic series shouldn't be here.
Yes. Call of Duty, you could make a fun... different thing. Come up with a different idea. Something two-dimensional. Something top-down. Something else. Yeah. But when you try to make this, it feels like, oh, a shitty version of the game I already played. Great. Sign me up. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a Medal of Honor game like that. Mm-hmm. The two Ace Combat games aren't particularly great. The first one was a little better than the second one. But it's just like, why you do this?
Like, the best case scenario are the was it Vice City Stories and Liberty City Stories for Grand Theft Auto? Those are... like high 90s games that became mid to high 80s games.
Yeah.
Whereas but that's its own genre, not first person shooter, which is like, you're going to see a major downgrade because you don't even have two thumbsticks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just really weird. Yeah. Custom Robo Arena came to the DS, which is one of the ongoing series. There's a GameCube version, I think, in 03 or 04, maybe. Spectrobes, which was another one of these. Kind of Pokemon style, like we have little monsters that you dig up and find, and then they have different, you know, evolutions through time or whatever. You could tell they wanted it to be a big thing and become a brand, and it did not. It didn't. But the biggest thing of the week, one of the biggest games of this platform, despite it being really long in the tooth, is God of War 2.
Upon defeating Ares, Kratos, the once mortal warrior, finds himself on a journey to the ends of the earth.
And Kratos covered in the ashes of his family.
And you should go get those bad guys, LL Cool J and Chris O'Donnell, here on City Arts and Lectures.
You joke, this is like your husband's favorite thing in the universe.
I know. He loves God of War, and he loves making fun of the voiceover with them. What's her name?
Oh, well, what's her name from...
You're Living Dangerously. She's an actress who won an actor Oscar for playing a dude.
Wow.
Yep.
But Kratos himself, he was the main love interest on Living Single.
What?
Yeah.
Linda Hunt. Sorry, her name's Linda Hunt. She's adorable. She looks just like Edna Mole from, what's it called? The Incredibles now. Anyway, I haven't played this game, so I'm just going to make shit up now.
Dave, what did you start to say?
Was that a joke?
No, I'm saying, the lead love interest guy on Living Single played Kratos.
The guy who... Not the guy who died.
No, no. Terrence C. Carson.
Are you kidding?
He played Kyle Baker on Living Single and voiced Mace Windu in Clone Wars, but was also known for voicing Kratos
what
in
the
God of War series from 2005 to 2013.
That seems like something I should... I just assumed you were joking because I had some pun in his name.
No. I remember
Brett and I were dumbfounded.
I only remember this because, like, I think it was, like, probably 2006 or 7 at GamePro. We're like, let's do a feature on the... Like, who are the voices between who play the most famous characters? Like... And most cases, just like, oh, they did like eight other things.
It's all John DiMaggio.
But this is like where we, but this is where we discovered this guy. This is where we discovered, like, oh, the big comfy couch girl. She's Claire. Like,
oh, yeah.
And like, yeah, once in a while you'll come up across like, okay, that guy played that guy?
Yeah.
Weird.
But yeah, God of War 2, like, again, this is 2007 and PS2 game. And this is 6 months after the PS3 launches. And this is still like the hypiest hyped game there was because nothing in the PS3 launch even came close to the hype surrounding God of War 2, and deservedly so. It was just a mean, vicious, angry, beat the shit out of Greek gods and tear their heads off and shit down their neck game.
And have sex with some things.
Sex with everything in the room. And like, and it's just like, it was such a, like, just a great send off to the PS2. Mm-hmm. And a system that started with such strong, like, Japanese ties goes out with such a strong Western thing and kind of sets the stage for the next generation of games where the West really took control, because by the end of the PS3 and 360 era, like, it's all Western games that are leading the pack. And even now, it's like only in the last 6 months of as we record this did a barrage of really strong Japanese games come out back to back to back to back to back, and it's like, oh damn, they're back.
I'm straining to think what was the biggest Japanese developed first party Sony game on the PS3.
I mean, I'll probably blank on this way too.
Demon's Souls.
I mean, they published it at least. But anyway, God of War, I mean, I'm sure anyone listening knows, but like, you play Kratos, who is a guy who decided
Giant guy.
Yeah, giant man who was a...
Here's the proportions of people who don't play video games making fun of video games. He's what they look like.
Yeah. Yep. And beats the shit out of he takes the place of Ares basically as a god of war, and gets revenge on, like, they tricked him and he ended up killing his family, and the grief of that makes him just I'll kill everything then.
Everything and everybody and all the gods.
Yeah. And that leads into PS3's God of War 3, which is even more of a spectacle. Yep. Just over the top moments. There's a lot of it took me out of it. It had a lot of those interactive cutscenes where you just push a button and like that always bugged me, when it's like, make me do the things. I hate pushing buttons with cutscenes in it. It's not fun and I hate it. But everything else around the game, the combat's good, the set pieces are great, and it just feels like a big game, especially when there are technically new consoles out. This still felt cutting edge and technologically interesting.
It would get re-released on the PS3 later on in one remastered thing.
That brings us to the end of the show, though. By the way, it did sell 4 million copies, so it was pretty...
Damn.
Despite being that late in the game. This is 2000s. Yeah, and the PlayStation 2 launched in 2000, so it's really, really late in the game. Mm-hmm. Comments, though, we always try to end the show now with some comments from y'all at 302010.net. Bread Truck asked, said, Brett was wondering if anyone knows what happened to the Ataris. I don't remember why we brought them up, but I'm sure one of the music segments. My band actually opened for them last fall.
Nice.
It was a $15 show, and there were only 20 people who paid to see them. Before the show, we were all joking about the Ataris because we liked them in high school and hadn't heard from them since, but they surprised us by being some of the nicest dudes we've ever played with.
Better be.
So that's nice. Sweet.
Been spending over a decade not getting sued.
Yeah. Ballerina Toshinden, still love that name. Said, if you're a European gamer in 1987, you wouldn't be playing Contra or Probotector, since the NES release didn't happen until 1990 which should go some way to explain Nintendo's lack of traction in the region until the Super NES. Instead, we got a home computer conversions of the arcade Contra under the name Grisor. Probably the most notable thing about the Euro release, though, is that the box art is made by Bob Wakeland for Ocean Software. It must have caught the eye of someone at Konami, since it ended up becoming the iconic artwork that appeared on the NES version. Although Ocean's release had the whole piece of artwork on it, not to mention the cool logo. Incidentally, while the characters on the box have a distinctly Schwarzenegger-Stallone feel to them, both of the poses are actually based on stills of Schwarzenegger in Predator. Mm-hmm. Bob Wakeland was enormously prolific and produced lots of excellent box art, mainly for Ocean. Check out his work on Operation Wolf, Midnight Resistance, Chase HQ, Vindicator, to name just a few. All of them embody the feel of 80s action movies. And finally, this is another long one from Coupon the Movie, but some of these are great. I've been catching up on these lately, and I need to bring something up you guys missed about a month ago. Hopefully this is a place where you will see it. Being from Buffalo, with the Canadian border literally less than 10 miles from my house, I grew up watching and listening to a ton of Canadian entertainment. In late January 87, Degrassi Junior High debuted on the CBC. This series, along with its sequel Degrassi High, is probably the most seminal piece of television entertainment for the entire generation of Canadian kids, and some American kids too. Its presentation of teenage issues is incredible for the time, very realistic, not condescending, often providing multiple, very reasonable reactions and viewpoints, and pretty daring in the topics it covered. Drugs, child abuse, teen pregnancy, homosexuality, racism, divorce, suicide, AIDS, abortion, alcoholism, death of a teen's parents, interracial dating, eating disorders, all things that kids going to a public school in the late 80s would likely have encountered.
That was one hell of an episode.
Man. Season premiere. Sweet.
Wow.
Yeah. I was only two when this show debuted. I grew up watching it as a result of the reruns. If you wanted a touch point for the series, coming up is the anniversary episode It's Late, which aired in the end of March, which is the time period we're in. It's the episode where 14-year-old Spike learns that she's pregnant, which, as far as I can tell, is one of the earliest portrayals of teen pregnancy on television, aside from the famous Rob Lowe after-school special. But yeah, the whole episode is on YouTube, uploaded by PBS. And then we have Newt Ninja saying, this week 10 years ago is especially important to me. Supreme Commander, we talked about a PC RTS strategy game, came out 10 years ago. It was the first game I ever worked on when I was new in the industry. I was hired at Gas Powered Games in 2006 after working at Electronics Boutique to help finish up Supreme Commander. I was wide-eyed and excited to finally be working in the games industry, a childhood dream realized. On Supcom, as we called it, or Supcom, I started as a production assistant doing whatever small-time tasks they gave me. If you see a screenshot of the game, I probably took it. It was a crazy production, and we worked late a lot, but I have fond memories of those days. I'm lucky enough to still be working in games now.
Okay.
And finally, we have an audio clip from last June that Matthew J. reposted to go, hey, if you're reading these now, you should play this.
All right.
This is from last June, so the movie that we're going to talk about. That's
Cartoon 101.
Matthew J., a.k.a. J. Button, a.k.a. Hitler Made This Batman, answering your question of the week. Now, I know that this show doesn't have a question of the week, so I made one up. And the question this week is, what movie discussed on last week's 302010 did Matthew J. see in the theater the day that he lost his virginity? And the answer to that is Pixar's Cars. That is a that's a real thing that happened in my life. I saw that movie in the theater with the girl I was with the day that we, you know, did that other thing. Also, seeing that movie is what we did after we did the other thing. So that girl was disappointed twice that day. Thanks, guys. Bye.
I got one question. Did you put it in her tailpipe?
Oh, David.
You know, that's not a first
time. It had to be the other way around because you know what they say. The Lightning McQueen makes some cream. It's every single time.
Ka-chow. In my pants.
Deaths this week.
Oh, God.
Changing topics really
Matthew
hard.
Matthew J.'s virginity.
Yeah.
Yes. Dead 10 years ago. This 20 years ago, Fred Zinnemann, 89 years old. Director?
Director. Fred Zinnemann's underappreciated director by the kids these days. He directed High Noon, From Here to Eternity, The Nun Stories, Sundowners, Man for All Seasons, and Day of the Jackal. Those are all outstanding movies. Sundowners I feel a little less about, but yeah. I've recommended at least From Here to Eternity on 302010, and Classic Corner, and Man for All Seasons. And Day of the Jackal is a really good assassination thriller.
And that does the end of the show. Again, you can go to 302010.net or find the podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on our partner Wondery at wondery.com/302010. Mm-hmm. Any of those places are great places to listen to the show. But as always, comments are always great because we can read them on the show and everybody gets to share little snippets of what they were doing in all those different years.
Mm, yeah. When did you lose your virginity? Tell us about it.
Man, what's the first movie I saw?
And pics. Please just attach pics. Plugs, baby. Laser Time. Laser Time's the show that sort of bore this idea. It's more topic-based than anything else. I hope by the time we have this up, we're going to talk. Logan came out, and we're going to talk about goodbyes to characters as
actors,
a result of that.
Actors who played a character for like a really long time, or characters that were around for a while, and a final send-off.
They don't always get as fitting a send-off as Logan, but you know, pretty neat. Pretty neat.
And patreon.com/lasertime is what funded this show. It's also the home to a lot of cool bonus stuff. The first season of Talking Simpsons, which you are on, Chris, where you guys chronologically go through every Simpsons episode and discuss it at length.
Mm-hmm.
Also, bonus time is exclusive to Patreon. It's a weekly bonus show where we talk about what's interesting us in 2017.
Every Tuesday.
There's also regular movie commentaries, wrestling match commentaries, cartoon commentaries. So
got a Danger
much...
Mouse drinking game up there I think you're really going to like.
And I know you wanted to watch, with commentary, the My Pet Monster live action.
Yes.
Oh,
God.
But I'm all... WrestleMania is going to be happening beginning of April, but we're going to have a wrestling match commentary in March that I think the three of us can talk at length about.
Oh, really?
It'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And if you like video games without me interrupting to talk about the TV career of Linda Hunt, then there's Video Game Apocalypse, which is a lot of fun and long and lots of video game talk. And if you want to talk classic movies, I am on Twitter now at ListenANerd.
I should say, we recently did our we each got on, along with Michael, got on VGA 200, VGA Apocalypse, and argued our top 20 games of all time.
Yes.
It's 3 hours long.
Oh, yeah.
And it's great.
But it's good.
Yeah.
It's good. Even I can listen to it.
It's the first show we've recorded that I re-listened to in like 5 years.
Wow.
And I didn't finish it because it's too long. But
yes. you turned it off at the after Monster Hunter got kicked off.
Well, no, I turned it off when I started the spiel. I'm like, I can't live through this again, man.
There's also an extra, 20 to 30 minutes conclusion where we rank every single one of those games.
Yeah.
It's exclusive to Patreon.
Yeah, Patreon is where it's at. And taking us out at the very end of the show...
Oh, birthday!
...is the Home Movies birthday song. Born this week, March 10th to the 16th, Carrie Underwood, Chuck Norris, Olivia Wilde, Timbaland... John Hamm, Johnny Knoxville, Terrence Howard, John Barrowman turns 50s from Torchwood and Doctor Who, you know. Mm-hmm. Rob Paulsen, famous voice actor.
Mm-hmm.
Liza Minnelli, James Taylor, Frank Welker, the voice of everything, is 71.
Santa Claus.
And dogs.
And dogs.
Aaron Eckhart, Common, who is so good in Wick 2.
Mm.
William H. Macy, Steph Curry, Albert Einstein, Billy Crystal, Michael Caine, Quincy Jones, Will I Am, Eva Longoria, Fabio, D. Snyder, Blake Griffin, Flavor Flav, and Jerry Lewis.
Thanks for pronouncing it correctly.
I had to get every letter in there. Enunciate your letters. Flavor Flav. Quiz. Born in 1958. She was nominated for a Golden Globe and an Oscar and won the former for this 1995 movie. She was in Police Academy 4.
Huh?
She was in The Quick and the Dead.
Sharon Stone.
Yeah.
There you go. I got to find which tab this is playing.
Jinx, Diana, you owe me some Coke.
I really thought the one with Police Academy was finally going to be where I break through.
Sharon Stone's in a Police Academy?
Yes.
That's what it says.
City Under Siege, I believe.
Oh, my gosh.
She replaced the other, the tall blonde lady from, the first three films.
I can imagine that was the case.
I think so.
I'll bow to you, the expert of Police Academy.
It's one of those things we can get wrong and no one will care about.
Oh, man. It's going to take us a long time to get to Quick and the Dead, but I cannot wait.
She may have been the one who was on the balloon with Steve Gutenberg at the end of Police Academy 4 when he flew away from the series forever.
That is still one of my favorite Talk Radar fan arts. Yes. Putting all of our faces on that goddamn balloon.
Brian Ward, Graboids on Twitter. He makes our logos.
So good. Does all our logos, yes. We'll go out with that John Williams' new ending song from Return of the Jedi Special Edition. And when we come back, what happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago?